Sunday, it's 7, and it's such a pleasure to welcome you to the big broadcast, Radio Theater from WAMU 88.5. Hi, everybody. I'm Murray Horwitz, and when we looked at all the shows we have planned for you tonight, we realized that there's a theme. In a word, it's murder. What seems an open and shut case on Dragnet, the classic Jack the Ripper tale, The Lodger, on Suspense, a supernatural murder on Weird Circle, and we'll find out what might have happened if Marie Antoinette had not been executed, courtesy of the series Stroke of Fate. But it's not all so macabre. We've got Gunsmoke, a tribute to the radio historian and broadcaster Dick Bertel, and a listen to the first broadcast presidential debate ever. It's all coming up. So settle back, settle in, don't worry about anything that vexed you last week, and put aside any concerns about the work week starting tomorrow. Instead, relax and exercise your imagination here on your Sunday Night Oasis, the big broadcast. Thank heaven for Dick Bertel. Mr. Bertel spent a lifetime as a broadcaster, mostly as an on-air personality at radio and TV stations in Connecticut, but he had some very important Washington, D.C. components to his resume. He was an innovative programming executive at The Voice of America here, and in the late 1980s, you could hear his voice on All News WTOP. But he's best known to big broadcast listeners for his many full and discursive interviews with some of the brightest lights in vintage radio. He and his partner Ed Corcoran created a show called The Golden Age of Radio that ran for some 7 years on station WTIC in Hartford. And for the last 30 years or so, Ed Walker and I have been pleased to share some of those interviews with you on Sunday nights. You can imagine how saddened co-producer Jill Arold Bailey and I were to learn of Dick Bertel's passing last month at the age of 92. The news came from our friend Art Chimes and from Mr. Bertel's son, Doug. Our condolences go out to Doug and the family and to Dick's many friends and listeners. Leave it to Jill to find the most appropriate way to honor Dick, whose priceless interviews will continue to be a part of our show from time to time. They featured such radio stars as Joan Fontaine, Don Ameche, and Rudy Valli. But tonight, just a couple of weeks before Halloween, Jill brought forth Dick Bertel's interview with a great all-around radio actor, the immortal Vincent Price. So, let's hear two masters, Dick Bertel and Vincent Price, as they appeared with Ed Corcoran in November of 1972 on WTIC's The Golden Age of Radio.
And now the host of The Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is radio collector Ed Corcoran. Ed, we have a special guest tonight, don't we?
We sure do, Dick. A man, a star of the movies, television, and as we'll find out in a few minutes, a big star on radio, too, Dick. Why don't you tell everybody who it is?
Well, of course, we're talking about Vincent Price. Vincent, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Golden Age of Radio.
Thank you, Dick. I feel like I'm back home.
That's the reason that you're on this program, because I knew that you were coming to Hartford, and naturally we thought of asking you to appear on the program, but usually someone whose motion picture career, whose theater career has perhaps overshadowed a radio career would be hesitant to talk about radio, but not you.
No, I still think radio is probably the greatest entertainment medium ever invented. It made the audience work. And I think television audiences don't have to work, and that's why they fall asleep half of the time.
Well, you worked in radio for a long time, right up until, I guess, the Hollywood studios closed in the early 60s.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you've just returned from England, where you are filming a motion picture, but you did some radio work there.
Yes, they called me up from the BBC. You know, radio in England is still enormous, and it always will be, because people love radio over there. And they do some superb dramas and music and documentary programs, really marvelous. And they asked me if I'd come and do a storytelling show, great short stories. stories that have to do with the macabre, with the unusual, with the strange.
We have received the impression in doing this series, Vincent, that some of the motion picture and theater actors look down on radio and radio actors. In fact, it was a very definite impression that we have received from some actors.
Really? you have come to the wrong fellow. If you want me to
hear that.
You know, I go out every year on a lecture tour all over the country and have for 15 years, and I've lectured in over 200 colleges and universities around the country, and I'm always getting asked by young actors, how do you start in the business? You know, what is the best training you can have? Well, we don't have the marvelous repertory companies that England has, and we don't have state theater as some other countries have. So there is really no place for the young actor to go. But in the colleges is always a radio and television department. And my advice to the young actor always is get on radio. Do as many dramas as you possibly can on radio, on your local show. And I know that some of the colleges I've been to have really started to begin to do some of the great radio dramas and to write new material for themselves. Because it imposes on the actor the necessity to create everything, to create the sets, to create the costumes, to create the expressions, to create everything. And I think one of the great drawbacks of television is that so much of it is just sort of visualized radio shows, where they ought to really write television shows. And, you know, I mean, they run out of material. It's a big monster. But radio had superb writers, absolutely extraordinary writers, and I don't think television has that all the time.
Well, you seem to have this perception for radio's gift, radio's ability to create moods, to create sets, because as a young actor in New York, I believe, you decided to work at least anonymously in radio.
Well, you know, I was doing a play. My first play in New York was a big hit. It was one of those extraordinary breaks that you get or you don't get. And it was a play opposite Helen Hayes, and it ran for 3 years. And there was no chance of sort of going out and doing other plays. I would go out in the summer, we'd lay off for a month, and I'd go do summer stock in Skowhegan, Maine, or all around here. And that was experience. But I felt that the one experience that I really could afford and get in New York was to work on soap operas. And marvelous things like John's Other Wife, you know, and I mean, extraordinary soap opera stories. And I would go work without a name, without anything, because I was not part of the radio group, but I could get jobs because I was in a hit play. And I would take advantage of that. And I worked on radio every single week and maybe would do 5 or 6 shows a week playing in these different kinds of radio dramas. And I learned my business, how you really create a part orally. And it was exciting and wonderful experience.
Well, of course, you appeared in so many of the anthologies. Lux Radio Theater, of course, because you were in so many of the movies. When would you begin rehearsal for a program?
It was a very long rehearsal period, and you really worked. You worked, maybe from 10 in the morning right straight through until you did the show maybe at 9 o'clock at night. And it was long hours of work. The extraordinary thing was the care that went into radio shows. There was a kind of perfection about the radio actor that was extraordinary. It was a very small group of people, and I always felt myself enormously privileged that I was able to join that group, because they didn't take everybody in by a long shot.
Well, we've learned that.
If you liked radio as much as I did, you depended on these people. People like Loreen Tuttle and Hans Conry and these people who could do anything. They really could do anything. I mean, suddenly if somebody got sick who was playing a Greek, you'd say, well, Hans, how about it? And he was a Greek in 2 seconds, or he was Russian, or whatever you wanted to do.
Tell the story about Loreen Tuttle.
It really is extraordinary. And you mentioned earlier today when we were talking about that she is famous for having done so many parts on one show. It may have been this show. 20th Century Fox, when I was under contract as a movie actor to them, I had written in my contract that I wanted the freedom to do radio. Now, there was no television at that time. And they were very sticky about it. They were really kind of angry that I should want this. And I said, I feel radio is my training ground, and that's where I want to work. But they let me do it. And so of all the contract players, I was the only one who was allowed to do it anytime I wanted to do it, and it didn't interfere with their films. Well, then they finally had their own radio show on the air, and I can't remember what it was called. I think Hedda Hopper was the MC.
Yeah, there was one called 20th Century Presents or something like that.
That's what it was. And we did a lot of pictures. I did The Lodger and, you know, different things like this. Anyway, there was one show where they had two little starlets, little pretty girls who were very sweet and who were up-and-coming stars. And they were on the show, and then there was one of their character women on the show, and none of them could do radio, because radio is not just getting up and reading. It is acting, you know. And they couldn't do it. And Loreen was playing the mother on it. So after about 2 days of rehearsal, they suddenly told one of the little starlets that she would have to go, so Loreen took that part. Then about another day, and they got rid of the next little starlet, and Loreen took her part. And it ended up with Loreen playing, I think, 5 or 6 different parts.
Incredible.
And it ended up, Loreen was a great friend of mine, and she had been the leading lady on The Saint for a long, long time with me. It ended up with my being absolutely hysterical because she was playing a woman 80, a woman 50, a woman 40, a child 13. You know, I mean, just any part that came up, and it was only Loreen and myself in a show that should have been 7 people. And I finally had to work on a separate mic because I couldn't look at her. Because she changed the whole characterization. Absolutely brilliant she was. Brilliant. Oh, I got to tell you a marvelous radio story. For years and years, we always listened to Jack Benny. Who didn't? Really the greatest, I think, single performer on radio that ever was. I mean, just absolutely brilliant. He could take 10 minutes of dead air and make you fall on your face laughing. And if you remember, Ronald Coleman was always the next door neighbor of the Bennies. Mm-hmm. And the Bennies, who were so chintzy and cheap and, you know, never had enough of anything, were always going over to the Colemans to borrow a cup of sugar or egg or something. So anyway, Lap Dissolve a few years. This shows you how much in love with radio I was. I did a film with Ronald Coleman, and he and his wife asked my wife and myself over to dinner. And we knew where Jack Benny lived. We'd always known where Jack Benny lives, one of the sort of landmarks of Hollywood. So we got in the car, all dressed up, went down, went next door to Jack Benny. Went up to the front door next door to Jack Benny, rang the bell and said, Mr. and Mrs. Coleman are expecting us, because they didn't live there at all. Not at all. Nor did we know where the hell they lived. And we finally had to call the Screen Actors Guild to find out where the Colemans lived. I always took it for granted they lived next door to Jack Benny. You know? And in his basement was a vault with all those chains around. Oh, marvelous man.
Oh, dear. Vincent, you did work in the Golden Age. I'm delighted to learn that you are contemplating a series for the BBC in radio. You're one of the very few people that we've been able to interview on this program who is considering furthering his radio career.
Yeah, I love it. I really love it. And I really think that the commercial people, you know, whoever they are, who say whether we work or don't work, are making a big mistake. California, where you drive enormous distances, I have that radio on all the time. And I'd like to hear something good.
You were talking about Lux Radio Theater, and this was probably the biggest radio dramatic production on the air, would you say?
Yes, it was really extraordinary. Cecil B. DeMille was the host, and William Keighley and different people, you know, I mean, very distinguished directors. And the fact that all of the money went to the Actors Fund was very impressive. Besides, I suppose it had one of the biggest listening audiences of all time. And these dramas were rehearsed like plays. You know, you rehearsed a full week. And I think some of the most exciting ones I did were The Letter with Bette Davis and Herbert Marshall. And that was kind of an extraordinary story because Bette, being as volatile a lady as she is and a wiggler, and wiggling was something you weren't meant to do in radio because you had to keep your distance from that. But they finally built an iron circle around the mic to keep Betty's distance away from it because she'd fall in love with it, you know, and she'd get up to it, and it goes pop and hiss and all of the things that you do when you get too close to a mic, which I'm probably doing right now.
Did you ever find that any of your colleagues from the motion picture screen were frightened of radio?
Terrified of it. Most of the stars at Fox, and I mean the great stars like Tyrone Power and people like that, when Fox had its own show, there were so few of them who knew how to work on radio. They didn't know how to read. They couldn't sustain it. They couldn't give it a variety. And it had to have a variety and a tremendous excitement to it. Even if it was a very calm performance, it had to have an inner excitement.
I think if I were to single out one show, one performance, in which I best remember Vincent Price on the radio, that would have to be from the suspense series, Three Skeleton Key.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant show. The young fellow who wrote it, I challenged him to write it. He was sort of trying to get into movies, and his name was James Poe. And he's since won about 5 Academy Awards. And he couldn't really get started. He couldn't get off the ground. He and his wife were great friends of ours. And I said, why don't you write me a radio show? He said, I don't know how to write for radio. And I said, what do you mean you don't know how to write for radio? You write. You create visual effects. You do, you know. So he searched around. He found this short story, and he adapted it to radio. And it really made his reputation, this story, because it became one of the great, really one of the great radio shows ever done.
Vincent Price, interviewed by a man who lived his life in front of the microphone, Dick Bertel, on Mr. Bertel and Ed Corcoran's program, The Golden Age of Radio, just after Halloween in 1972. And we'll be playing that Three Skeleton Key that Mr. Price just mentioned on our Halloween show in a couple of weeks. And as always, we'll continue to revisit the Dick Bertel interviews from time to time here on the big broadcast. I'm Murray Horwitz. Jill Arold Bailey is our co-producer. Kenny Pirog is the audio engineer. And this is WAMU Washington in HD at 88.5, on your smart speaker, and at WAMU.org. For co-producer Jill Arold Bailey and audio engineer Kenny Pirog, this is Murray Horwitz. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And please join us here next Sunday. Good night, everybody.